Well, I'd like to thank the Fields Institute and in particular Ken for inviting me here. It was a great shame that when I found out that I couldn't come for my three-month visit in October. But anyway, you get a very short course from me. Basically, I just want to give an overview of numerical methods for solving stochastic differential equations. Actually, I was pleased. I was walking around Toronto last night and I actually found a Venus, which is somewhere in west of Law. So Toronto is clearly famous for stochastic differential equations. So what I'm going to do is first section talk about some applications, some simple financial models and some models in computational biology. Second part, we'll talk about the fundamentals of stochastic differential equations. Few things about Wiener processes, Poisson processes, Itô calculus and Stratonovich calculus. Then I'll talk about what numerical methods might look like for solving stochastic differential equations, and then try and relate techniques for solving stochastic differential equations back to the deterministic case, because there are lots of similarities and overlaps, but there are lots of differences as well. And then in section 5, talk about some implementation issues. How do you implement these things? And in particular, talk about variable step size implementations. Well, probably everyone in the audience knows this application, but let me mention it once again. If you take it as a deterministic problem, I should have brought my pointer with me, dS equals ASdt, so the solution is an exponential. And supposing you perturb A by white noise with an amplitude of sigma. Then we get an equation dS equals mu sdt for sigma sdw, where we've written dw as a white noise times a small time increment. So formally, we interpret the differential of the Wiener process as white noise. I'll say more about that in a minute. So you get a linear multiplicative noise problem. Multiplicative noise in the sense that the variable S is attached to the Wiener increment in the stochastic differential equation. And we'll see a bit later that you can solve this problem as the exponential of some term plus sigma times the Wiener increment, wt minus wt naught. And so this is the famous model of Black and Scholes, geometric Brownian motion, which has had such enormous impact since 1973 in the pricing of all sorts of options. So it's had a very positive impact there, and in some cases a negative impact as well, where we saw a couple of years ago the collapse of long-term capital management, and there was a $400 billion bailout with enormous implications around the world. And I've just got a simulation, a typical simulation with respect to a Wiener path of this solution up here. Now, before I go on, I might actually just say something about how would you simulate this equation here? I want to draw a graph of it. How do you do that? It's not something entirely trivial, so maybe I just spend 1 minute saying something about that. Is one of these lights going to work? Okay, so what I want to do is just plot this at a set of equidistant time points, for example. Now, I haven't said what this is yet, but it's a Wiener increment on the interval t0 to t, and that Wiener increment is a stochastic process which is normally distributed with mean 0 and variance the length of that interval. So the Wiener increment and it has the important property that the increments are independent over non-overlapping time intervals. So now I want to simulate the solution. How do I do that? Well, there's one obvious way that you could do it, and that is at each point here, what do you have to do? You can work out this difference t minus t0 for different discrete time points. And you also have to somehow simulate this. Okay? So one thing, it's very easy, is to say at t1, t2, t3, t4, what I've got to do is simulate this Wiener increment at these time points. So how do I do that? Well, this distance here is h, this distance here is 2h, 3h, and so on. So at this point, for example, it'd be a matter of simulating a normal random variable with mean 0 and variance 3h. And at this point, a normal random variable with mean 0 and variance 4h and so on. Now, this is an exercise I always give to my students when I'm teaching stochastic differential equations. And I just ask them to use MATLAB to simulate this equation. And invariably, the good students don't do this, and the not-so-good students do this. And the problem of doing it this way, of course, is that you don't have independence on this interval, on this interval, on this interval, on this interval. So it doesn't satisfy the fact that the Wiener increments are independent of one another on non-overlapping intervals. Okay, so doing it this way, you know, taking an interval of length 4h here, and then 5h and 6h, and simulating a normal random variable of that distribution is the wrong way of doing it. I'm sure this is entirely obvious, but anyway. What is the right way of doing it? Is to realize that, okay, if you want to compute S at TI, to realize that WTI minus WT0 is in fact the sum of the Wiener increments from N equals 1 up to I. So to realize that this is equal to WTI minus WTI minus 1 plus down to WT1 minus WT0. And so you replace this by the sum j equals 1 to I of WTj. What does that mean? It means on each subinterval of length h, I generate a set of normal zero h random variables. So on each interval, I generate a set of independent random variables normally distributed with mean zero and variance h. Okay, so I generate that set. 100 of them, whatever. And then when I want to compute this approximation at each of these time points, I have to add up, if I'm at this point here, I have to add up these things here, and I put it in this formula here. And if you do it that way, of course, that's preserving the independence of the Wiener increments over non-overlapping intervals. And then you get the right distribution. So I'm sure that's obvious, but I thought I'd say that now. Just turn the light off. So here's a second example that I've actually, I'm working with a PhD student. We're trying to model the energy markets in Australia. And the energy markets behave quite differently to the stock exchange, the stock markets. Because there you've got sudden unexpected changes. Well, I guess you have those also in when you have a stock crash, but in the energy market, you have sudden unexpected changes. Some transmitter fails or a network goes down, or it gets really hot and everyone puts their air conditioners on and you get overloads and all sorts of things. So that means you can't, if you try to put a model up to describe this, you have to use some other stochastic process in addition to a Wiener process. And usually what's used is a jump process, P. And so now you end up with a stochastic differential equation, which is driven by a Wiener process W and a Poisson process P, or a jump process. And here's a typical simulation of some, and here we have mean reversion. So in other words, the sort of equilibrium of S here is round the mean mu. So it's always, as you integrate, your solution is always being driven back to mu, which in this case is 1. So here we have a simulation where you see jumps at these points of various sizes. And so what's of interest in Australia, and I'm sure in North America as well, is how can you price electricity? And so the challenge is now to try and come up with pricing regimes for underlying stochastic processes which take this form, where now you have a Poisson process as well as a Wiener process. In fact, Merton wrote a paper back in 1976, which was a fundamental paper where it wasn't about energy modelling, but it was about trying to model the stock market where there were sudden, unexpected changes. And so now people attempt in this area attempt to use that paper as it's a fundamental paper, and try to use that paper to price various types of exotic options concerning energy production. And essentially it's Black-Scholes type theory. Sorry? Yeah, if I just, it's the way I've set it up. So, just a few applications in the area of computational biology. DNA folding. DNA has to fold incredibly tightly so that it can be packaged up into chromosomes. And how does this folding take place? Various models have been set up to try and attempt to describe whether the DNA is short or whether it's of long length, so whether it's hundreds of kilobases or tens of thousands of kilobases. In each case, the model is based on mass spring models. Okay, so like spring models, Hooke's law, for example. But these spring models operate under some thermal fluctuation. Okay, so they assume some Brownian noise a Langevin type equation in the background. And essentially, this DNA looks like a worm that writhes through space. And there's a model which has been in the literature for a number of years. It's called the Ermac-McCammon model. You have a set of coordinates, a set of velocities. It's something like a Hamiltonian equation, only it's got a stochastic component. There's a potential energy. There's a diffusion tensor. And in this particular model, the hard part is the factorization of this diffusion tensor d of y, which you're given, into this sort of Cholesky factorization of this L of y, remembering that this system of equations can be anywhere between 100,000 and a million components. And so this is a nonlinear problem. It's Hamiltonian-like, in some sense. Developing numerical methods to solve equations like that are quite challenging. And I'll try and say a bit more about this later. When I talk a little bit about Hamiltonian problems and numerical methods for solving stochastic Hamiltonian problems. Another important area that's becoming very popular is understanding the behavior of genetic networks. So, after the sequencing of the human genome under Celera, the number of estimates of genes suddenly went down from 100,000 to something like 35,000 genes. You've got all this data, what do you do with it? So there are people looking, trying to understand organisms in terms of genetic networks, whether they be small world networks or whether they be some complicated set of ordinary differential equations. Well, they're probably not ordinary differential equations. They're probably stochastic. Well, they are stochastic. So as soon as you go to the stochastic case, you get all sorts of interesting things happening. So here's a model. I haven't put up the model, but it's a coupled stochastic differential equation. It's a bit like the top, only there's no Laplacian operator in it, so it's a coupled system of stochastic ordinary differential equations. And it has an additive noise term. Okay, so by that I mean dy equals fy dt plus sigma dw. So there's a constant amplitude of sigma that operates on the Wiener increment. And this sigma can have very interesting effects on the underlying ordinary differential equation. So if this underlying ordinary differential equation has a set of equilibria points, then what is the effect of the noise? Well, it depends on the size of the noise. But what can happen is that the influence of this noise can allow a solution to explore all possible equilibrium states of the underlying deterministic problem. And so here we had a problem which had four equilibrium points. And as we increase the size of the noise term, the solution can explore in turn each of the equilibrium points. And so it starts off here, it stays around this equilibrium point, and then suddenly, because the your Wiener path is such that you might get a large Wiener increment that's large enough to kick it across the next equilibrium point, and then it stays near that equilibrium point, and suddenly you get a large enough Wiener increment but it kicks it to the next equilibrium point and so on. And how long a solution may stay near one of the deterministic equilibrium points depends on the size of the noise and indeed whether it gets to that equilibrium point. Well, I have some other examples there that I don't think I'll say so much about. This is a nice example where people are looking to try and understand the behavior of protein motors. So it's a nanotechnology application, if you will. And so molecular motors are ubiquitous in cells. Basically, they govern all sorts of ion transport across cell membranes. And they work by the proteins change their conformational state. And that, and with the interaction of the thermal fluctuations modeled by Brownian noise, can cause ions to be pumped across cell membranes. And the underlying, or the basic idea is the idea of this ratchet effect, where what you have is you have a spatially periodic system, which is subject to thermal equilibrium fluctuations, which you model by Brownian noise. You have some periodic forcing term, which is driving the solution away from the equilibrium. But what you can get is you can get a preferred flow of whatever it is, whether it's ions or whatever it is. Okay, so you can actually, using these models, construct rather simplistic models that describe the behavior of molecular motors. So here's an example of a simple model where you've got a gradient, you've got a periodic forcing term f of t, and you've got some constant Brownian motion. One way of solving this, there are a number of ways of solving this problem. The most appropriate way of solving this problem is to try and actually solve the problem using what's called Fokker-Planck theory. So the solution of that stochastic differential equation is a stochastic process and it has a distribution. So you can attempt to try and you can solve this problem in three ways. One is you can attempt to compute moments of the solution, so means and variances and so on. One is to try and simulate trajectories. So each time you, whenever you generate a Brownian path representing your Venian increments, you can generate a trajectory associated with that Brownian path. Your Brownian path changes, your trajectory changes, of course. And the third way to solve it is to try and compute the probability density function of that stochastic process, Y. And you can do that by using a theory known as Fokker-Planck theory, which essentially takes your stochastic differential equation, whatever it is, and turns it into a deterministic partial differential equation, the solution of which gives you the probability density function for that stochastic process. And so that's one way of doing that is to you define a particle current, and you can show that this particle current is then the solution of a partial differential equation, which you can then attempt to solve, and which gives you the probability density function of the particle current. I won't go into the details, but and I have some. This is a pretty picture I had of a protein motor which we actually visualized. It has a turbine at the top. It's a hexamer turbine, which and basically the thermal noise is actually and thermal noise interacting with the way the protein changes its shape actually turns the turbine, and the turbine causes a flow of ions across the membranes of the cell. And when you actually visualize this molecule, it's got 33,000 atoms, you actually see very clearly the turbine at the top, and you can actually, using some of these models, you can actually see the turbine moving, turning, as a little protein motor. So this is just a schematic, but you get an idea of what it looks like. So there's the turbine at the top. And you can see the sort of axle shape thing here. So I just wanted to give some brief applications. For those of you who are interested, there's a couple of nice books. I think everyone here would know the book by Wilmot. There's a new book out by Cluland and Strickland. They're actually based in Sydney in Australia. This is Energy Derivatives, and where they use the language of Poisson processes to try and describe some of the models that you need if you're trying to price energy options. There's this nice book by Lowenstein, which talks about the rise and fall of long-term capital management. And then there's a couple of articles which focus on the bioinformatics computational biology side. One is by Schlick, Computational Challenges in Simulating Large DNA. The model was based on this Ehrmich-McCammon model. And there's a nice book which is a series of articles on stochastic processes in physics, chemistry and biology. And there, a few of the articles there talk about molecular motors. So those are just some very brief applications, a little bit of reading. What I wanted to do now was spend a little bit of time talking about the fundamentals of stochastic differential equations, how they are similar to ordinary differential equations, but also how they're different to ordinary differential equations. So equation 5 here is a very general representation of a stochastic differential equation driven by D independent linear processes. So if all the G, J, Y's are zero, of course you just have a standard ordinary differential equation. And I might say you can also use this model for stochastic partial differential equations as well. We're working in a different space, working in a Hilbert space. So number 5 is a very general representation, but I'm just going to work with ordinary differential equations and stochastic ordinary differential equations. I'm not going to have Poisson processes in this discussion, but they could equally be in there if we wished. So the key is to realize that there's an integral form representation of that stochastic differential equation, which you get by integrating. So you can integrate 5 between the initial point T0 and T, and you get equation 6. So all that is fairly obvious. What's not obvious is what this thing here is. Here we have an integral with respect to a Wiener increment. So we have to understand what that second integral is. So before I do that, let me just say a little bit more about white noise. I've said it already. So a Wiener process is a stochastic process in time and with respect to a set of random variables with the following properties. The mean of the Wiener process, the expectation is always zero for all time. And the variance of a Wiener increment on an interval ST is the length of that interval. So in other words, a Wiener increment on an interval ST can be viewed as a normal random variable with mean zero and variance T minus S. And Wiener increments are independent of one another on non-overlapping intervals. That's the other important point. Now, I don't go into this in detail in this talk, but formally you can view the differential of a Wiener increment with respect to time as white noise, even though that derivative nowhere exists. But a Wiener process is itself continuous. So you can see over an interval from 0 to t, the Wiener process always has mean 0, and its variance is t. So the variance grows like time. So it gets larger and larger as your time interval gets larger and larger. So, given that, what we're going to try and do is understand what this stochastic interval is like. Okay, so the way to do it is as you would do in the deterministic case. So you take your interval, which in this case is, say, AB, and you put a partition on the interval AB. And it could be an equidistant partition, so T0, T1, T2, up to Tn. And then we're going to construct these what are called natural approximating sums. So here I've got a stochastic integral with respect to a Wiener process W, and I'm integrating the stochastic process X. And we're asking the question, what does this stochastic integral, which is itself a stochastic process, what does it look like? So we want to compute U. So what we start off by doing is computing U sub n, where U sub n is the sum over the partition of the stochastic process integrated, the sum of the stochastic process evaluated a set of points tor I, where each tor I is in the subinterval ti minus 1 to ti, so in the partition, times the Wiener increment, because that Wiener increment represents dw. Okay, if it was Riemann-Stieltjes, that you would replace the wti minus wti minus 1 by the length of each subinterval in your partition. It's a stochastic process with certain assumptions on it. Well, I have to make some assumptions about it. But in general, it's any stochastic process. Now, what we're going to say is this tor I, it should always appear at the same point within the interval ti minus 1 to ti. So we're going to write tor I is 1 minus theta, ti minus 1, plus theta, ti. And this theta has some constant number on the partition. It's somewhere between 0 and 1. So it could be 0, 1/2, 1, 3/4, 1/3, whatever you want. Then we say that the un converges to the stochastic integral u in the mean square, it's the expectation of the absolute value of the square of the difference goes to zero as n goes to infinity, as the partition becomes dense on the interval. So that's the definition of mean square convergence. Now, it turns under that definition, the stochastic integral U changes its value depending on theta. So, this is an example. We take the stochastic process X as the Wiener process itself. The integral of W of T, dW of T. Now, somehow should be a theta here. You can show, using mean square convergence, that this integral is equal to this thing here, where lambda should be theta. And it's not too difficult to do. In this case here, you just replace x by w, and so you've got to sum up w of tau I times the Wiener increments, and you play around with it a bit, you massage them here and there, you use the independence of Wiener intervals, the independence of Wiener increments on non-overlapping intervals, and you can show this quite simply. So the stochastic integral depends on theta. In other words, it depends on where you sample the stochastic process on each subinterval, which is counterintuitive if you just work in the Riemann-Stieltjes world. And so it's this fact that lends us to consider what are called different types of stochastic calculi, in particular Itô calculus and Stratonovich calculus. So in the Itô calculus, the value of theta here is zero. That is, in other words, we're always sampling the stochastic process X at the beginning of each subinterval. If you do that, that leads to the Itô calculus, and there is a whole calculus based around that. If you sample in these sums up here always at the midpoint of the subinterval, so Ti plus 1 plus Ti upon 2, then that means that theta equals a half, and this term doesn't appear. This term vanishes. And that's called Stratonovich calculus. And those are essentially the two main types of calculi that are used in stochastic differential equations, Itô and Stratonovich. They're not the, I mean, there's an infinite number of calculi, but these are the main ones that are used. Theta is a constant here. You could do that. I'm not sure what that would give for you, but here I'm assuming theta is constant. So the nice thing to see is that if this was integral of t dt, then you would get this, where this would be b squared minus a squared. So you could make the hypothesis that if you use Stratonovich calculus, it looks very much like standard Riemann-Stieltjes calculus. In fact, it's the same rules. So in Stratonovich calculus, this term isn't here, and this is what you would expect from the deterministic setting. So the nice thing about the Stratonovich calculus is that the things that you do with it, like chain rules and all those other sorts of things, behave the same standard rules of calculus that we know and love. Whereas if we use the Itô calculus, we've got this additional term, minus a half b minus a, the length of the interval. And the rules associated with Itô calculus are different. Chain rules are different, for example. So I more or less said that there. So the Stratonovich calculus obeys, as usual, in quotes, rules of calculus, whereas Ito behaves differently. But the Ito calculus has some very nice properties. One property is that the expectation of a stochastic integral, interpreted as an Ito integral, is always zero. For example, if we just go back, over here we had that integral zero to t . This is very easy to show in this case. It's just some trivial manipulation. The integral of w dw is 1/2 w squared of t minus t in the Ito calculus. Now, if you take the expectation of both sides, expectation of this equals the expectation of that, the variance of the Wiener process is t. Okay, so the expectation of that thing is always zero. And indeed, for any stochastic integral, we have this nice property of the expectation of a stochastic integral is zero under the Ito calculus, but not under the Stratonovich calculus. We also have the nice property that the expectation of the square of the stochastic integral is the integral of the expectation of the stochastic process squared with respect to time. So in this case, what we say is that the Ito integrals inherit the martingale properties of the underlying stochastic process that drives them. What do I mean by that? Well, the expectation of a Wiener process is zero. Okay, so under the Ito calculus, the expectation of the stochastic integral is also zero. So the integral, the property of the stochastic integral inherits the property of the underlying process that's driving it. And here we know that the expectation of dw squared is, of s, is ds. And the variance of the Wiener process is equal to the length of the interval is equal to s. So again, this property is inherited from what we know about the expectation of this thing squared. That doesn't happen in the Stratonovich case. Fortunately, there's a relationship between a Stratonovich formulation and an Ito formulation. So here, what people normally do is they put a little circle. That means that if I was to integrate this stochastic differential equation, this integral here would be interpreted as a Stratonovich integral. So that's what the little circle means. So there's a relationship between the solution of the Stratonovich stochastic differential equation and the solution of an Ito stochastic differential equation. And the relationship is described here. So that if x is the solution of this Stratonovich SDE, it's also the solution of this Ito SDE, where the stochastic component hasn't changed, but the deterministic component has changed by this term here. And indeed, if you were to define another stochastic integral where theta was a third rather than 0.5, there would be a similar relationship in here that would depend on theta. Okay, so what that means is that when you solve a stochastic differential equation, the first thing you have to know is in what form is it? Is it of Stratonovich form or is it of Itô form? And the second thing that should be perfectly clear is if you're trying to design a numerical method, you design a numerical method that solves, for example, an Itô equation or a Stratonovich equation. You can't design a numerical method that solves both at the same time. If you have a numerical method that works for Itô, you can always take your Itô equation, convert it to a Stratonovich equation, and vice versa, and use your numerical method. But that requires you to compute some Jacobians, which might be expensive. So the important point is that if you're going to solve a stochastic differential equation, you have to know in what form is it in. So either the person has to tell you in what form it is, or if you've been doing some modelling, you have to understand how the modelling process might lead to a stochastic differential equation, and then what is the natural representation, is it Itô and Stratonovich, and that's not always easy to ascertain. And the second point is that if you're designing a numerical method, you design a numerical method for an Itô or a Stratonovich, and not for both. And I think I've got one more. Yeah, so one more slide, and that will probably finish the first part of the talk. Just here's a little example of modelling with an SDE. Let's take the logistic equation dy equals y into lambda minus y dt, the Verhulst model. And let's suppose now that lambda isn't known perfectly, it's influenced by some noisy process, whatever that might be. So perturb lambda as lambda 0 plus z of t, where z of t is some stochastic process. Doesn't matter what it is at the moment. So we can now write our original deterministic equation as this equation up here. Now, if z of t is white noise, then formally z dt is equal to dw. And so now we have a stochastic differential equation with multiplicative noise, which is driven by a Wiener process. But that noise term, that z of t, could arise in a different way. Z could itself be the solution of another stochastic differential equation. And if Z is the solution of this stochastic differential equation, then Z is said to have coloured, is to be of coloured noise form, or it's an Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. Okay, so here now, Z is not white noise, but it's the solution of some other stochastic differential equation. And if you see here, it's additive noise because this sigma here is a constant. So here's Z. This is a linear stochastic differential equation. You can write down the solution of this equation just by integrating both sides. And you can show that the solution of this equation is this equation here. So there's an exponential damping term, and now we have a stochastic integral of an exponential term with respect to the Wiener increment. And these two representations are completely different. So here, Z, in the top level, Z is white noise. So Z dt is a Wiener increment. And in the second example, Z takes this form. So there's some strong damping going on in terms of this e to the minus gamma of t. So that's called a coloured noise process. And the coloured noise process behaves quite differently to white noise process. And the essential difference between colored noise and white noise is that in colored noise, the variance of colored noise is banded. So in case of a Wiener process, the variance of a Wiener process is T, so the length of the interval that you're working with. So as T grows, the variance grows. With colored noise, or sometimes called banded noise, the variance of the noise process is banded. And you could actually, if this is your Z, we can work out the mean, we can work out Z squared, we can work out the expectation of Z squared, and it's basically some exponential that approaches this limit. So there are lots of, when you're doing modeling, there are lots of people who work with colored noise processes rather than white noise processes. Now the other thing I just want to say, and then we can stop for 15 minutes or so, is that if you work with colored noise, we now have a set of coupled stochastic differential equations. We have this first one up here, and we have the second one here. Okay? But you can still view those two equations as a stochastic differential system driven by the Wiener process. Okay, so even though you're modeling with colored noise, all you're really doing is augmenting your original stochastic differential equation by one more equation, and then you can view that bigger system still as a stochastic differential equation driven by your single Wiener noise process, or however many noise processes you have. But the other nice thing about it is if you look at equation 1 and equation 2, you look at them as a system, the noise is additive. Okay, so if you view this as white noise, you see that the white noise is multiplicative because there's a Y term in there. But if you view it as colored noise, the system increases by a dimension of 1, but now the structure of the system has an additive noise structure. So there's only a constant that goes with the Wiener process. And it turns out that it's easier to design more effective numeric